Well, that's the reason that we're here.
Why do you think we're here?
Because the family's calling us, saying we haven't heard from our daughter and our sister.
That makes sense.
Okay, that makes sense?
Yeah.
Okay, why does that make sense?
Because I haven't heard from her either.
The Mr. Big operation is an investigative technique used by law enforcement agencies, especially in Canada. It's a type of undercover operation designed to obtain a confession from a suspect in a serious criminal case. In 2019, after a mother and her young daughter vanished in Cranston, Canada, detectives quickly zoned in on a primary suspect. They just needed the evidence for an arrest, so they turned to the controversial technique. Cranston is situated in the southeast of Calgary in Alberta, Canada. It's a meticulously planned suburban community, offering a range of amenities and services tailored to the needs of its residents. Nestled near the Bow River and Fish Creek Provincial Park, this sought-after area provides a seamless connection to nature. Boasting proximity to major roadways, public transportation, and direct access to the Trans-Canada Highway, which leads to the stunning Rocky Mountains, Cranston isn't only well-connected, but also strategically located. Cranston was home to the Blanket family, and on the 23rd of April 2019, they had prepared a family dinner. Kim Blanket anticipated the arrival of her 25-year-old daughter, Jasmine Lovett, and her 22-month-old granddaughter, Elias Anderson. However, as the evening unfolded, both were noticeably absent. Concerned, Kim's initial worry transformed into growing anxiety as the minutes turned into hours. Despite persistent attempts to reach her daughter, Jasmine, all calls went unanswered, diverting straight to voicemail. The family were exceptionally close, and they regularly gathered for family dinners, making Jasmine's absence particularly alarming. In the face of mounting concern, Kim called police to report her daughter and granddaughter as missing. In June of 2017, Jasmine Lovett gave birth to a baby girl with her boyfriend at the time, Robbie Sanderson. They named the little girl Aaliyah, and she immediately became the apple of her mother's eye. As her grandmother Jody Sanderson recollected, "You know, every mom's life becomes about their baby, but you could see the happiness on their faces when they were together." All Jasmine had wanted in her life was to be a mother, and when Aaliyah came along, they were inseparable. Aaliyah was described by her family as a little spitfire. She had bounds of energy and was happy-go-lucky for the most part. Aaliyah was also a quick learner and very smart for her age, having learned to walk very early and even trying to sing before she could talk. For the first year of Aaliyah's life, the family unit was complete. However, in 2018, Jasmine and Robbie called it quits on their relationship. Following the separation, the relationship between Jasmine and Robbie became even more strained. In September of 2018, she had turned to the courts for protection from him, seeking a no-contact order. Jasmine reported that Robbie had come home drunk and high on drugs, and had become aggressive towards her. During the court hearing, Jasmine said of Robbie, "His behavior is very bizarre, aggressive. He wanted me to give him some money to get some more drugs and alcohol, and I said no, so he kicked open the main door." Robbie searched the home for Jasmine's purse, and she told him to wait downstairs while she went upstairs to retrieve some money, which was a ruse. Once upstairs, Jasmine locked her bedroom door and called 911. Robbie heard her and kicked open the bedroom door and launched on top of her, grabbing her cell phone from her hands. Jasmine feared for her life as well as for the life of their daughter. but just as suddenly as Robbie appeared, he left again. When police arrived at the family home, he was nowhere to be found. Police told Jasmine that since she wasn't physically harmed, there was nothing that could be done. Nevertheless, the judge ultimately granted the emergency protection order. Just 13 days later, Court of Queen's Bench Justice Scott Brooker revoked it after he was informed by Jasmine and Robbie that they had resolved their differences. Jasmine and Robbie's relationship had been deteriorating over some time. When Jasmine finally decided to end it, she felt prepared to embark on a new chapter in her life. Turning to the internet, Jasmine registered on a dating website and connected with a 34-year-old man named Robert Leeming. Originally from Stoke-on-Trent in the United Kingdom, Robert had a background in the British Army. Around 6 years earlier, he had relocated to Canada after marrying a Canadian woman named Sarah. Settling down in Cranston, Robert and Sarah started a family, and they had a 5-year-old son. Similar to Jasmine and Robbie's experience, Sarah and Robert's relationship also faced its share of challenges. Following their divorce in 2018, Sarah reported Robert for animal abuse. He had taken their dog Axel to Prattis, where he chained him to a tree without providing any food or water. Fortunately, a local resident discovered Axel and turned him over to the Calgary Humane Society. Robert later pleaded guilty to 3 animal cruelty charges, including causing an animal to be in distress, failing to provide adequate food and water, and failing to provide adequate shelter. The court imposed a $5,000 fine on him and issued a 10-year ban on owning animals. In the divorce documents, Sarah expressed various concerns about Robert, describing him as cruel. She had also disclosed her fear that he might have been planning to kill her. Before leaving Robert, Sarah had discovered disturbing search terms on his computer, including an article about chaining a dog to a tree and another about a mother and child dying in a house fire. In an affidavit, Sarah stated, "It didn't leave my mind that he actually did one of those things." She additionally accused Robert of causing significant emotional distress during their marriage. Following their separation, Robert decided to remain in Canada. With a stable job as a heavy equipment technician and a son to care for, he saw no compelling reason to return to the United Kingdom. When Jasmine struck up a relationship with Robert over the internet, she was unaware of his troubling history. After several weeks, Robert proposed that she and Aaliyah move in with him. Jasmine agreed. By October, the 3 of them were living in Robert's townhouse in southeast Cranston. After Jasmine and Aaliyah were reported missing by her mother, detectives quickly began trying to retrace their last known movements. On the 14th of April, Jasmine, Aaliyah, and Robert had gone to dinner at her mother's home. Jasmine's sister Genevieve recalled how Jasmine and Robert seemed more distant than usual. She recollected, "It was very strange. It seemed like, emotionally, it wasn't quite on the level you would think a relationship would be." The next day, Jasmine was captured on surveillance video at a grocery store while Aaliyah was in daycare. Then the next morning, Robert dropped Aaliyah off at the daycare and then picked her up in the early evening. From here, all traces of the mother and daughter disappeared. Detectives considered the possibility that Jasmine had left on her own accord with her daughter, but that was something that the family refuted. When detectives looked into Aaliyah's bank records to try and figure out more, they learned that it hadn't been active since the 18th of April, 2 days after Jasmine was last seen. Detectives soon enough ruled out that Jasmine had left willingly with her daughter, began to consider the possibility that something more nefarious had taken place. They knew about the troubled relationship and separation between Jasmine and Robbie, but he was quickly ruled out as a suspect. Following their separation, he had nothing to do with Jasmine or his daughter. After speaking with Jasmine and Leah's family, detectives were made aware of her living situation with Robert. They told detectives that Jasmine and Robert had been dating since September of the previous year, after meeting on the internet. The next point of investigation for detectives was to speak to Robert. But despite their best efforts, he couldn't be reached by his cell phone. Despite their efforts to reach Robert, detectives faced difficulty contacting him, prompting them to proceed to his townhouse. They repeatedly knocked on the front door and identified themselves, yet they received no response. Despite the silence, signs suggested that somebody was present inside. Robert's car was in the driveway, and the lights were switched on. After a prolonged wait without any reply, detectives obtained authorization and forcibly entered through the front door. Upon entering, they discovered Robert seated in the living room sofa. He seemed dazed and confused, but unnaturally relaxed to the scenario that was unfolding.
How's it going?
Says she's with her sister.
Well, that doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
Well, we're just going to take a quick look around.
We're going to have a look.
So, sir, you're Robert?
Yeah, I am.
Okay.
Yeah, that's the door. I was sleeping. I sleep with plugs in and...
Hey, well, we've been here for hours and hours and hours now, hey? Banging on your door and...
Ringing on the doorbell.
Calling your phone.
I've been drinking and smoking a lot, so...
Okay.
Okay, so... She's not with her sister.
What do you mean?
Robert said to the detectives that he had been asleep with his headphones in, which was why he hadn't picked up his cell phone or answered the knocks. According to Robert, he had no idea that Jasmine and Aaliyah were missing. He claimed that Jasmine had told him that she was going to stay with her sister over the Easter holidays.
Well, that's the reason that we're here.
Why do you think we're here?
Is the family's calling us, saying we haven't heard from our daughter and our sister.
Yeah, it makes sense.
Okay, that makes sense?
Yeah.
Okay, why does that make sense?
Because I haven't heard from her either.
One of the detectives then asked Robert if he and Jasmine had some kind of argument that could help explain her disappearance.
So do you guys get in some sort of argument? Not that you're aware of. Like, you're not making a whole lot of sense to me,
like,
guy.
Like, I don't know what... Sorry, I'm still getting my bearings here. So she's not with her family. But she did threaten to move out. I don't know, like 3 weeks ago. We got into a tizzy. She threw a bunch of my stuff out, food, stuff like that. And I had a discipline talk about that. But nothing like that would concern me.
Nothing that would concern you. Okay.
As Robert spoke with the detective, he tried to downplay his relationship with Jasmine.
They move out. Don't
right, but this isn't just like a roommate. This is your girlfriend.
No, it's more roommate than girlfriend.
Okay.
She's more of a roommate than a girlfriend?
Yeah.
The detectives were surprised by his claims, because according to Jasmine's family, they were in a relationship. The detectives then asked Robert when he had last seen Jasmine and her daughter.
Okay, so... The last time that you saw Jasmine was when?
Thursday.
Okay. And at that time, you guys were A-okay or fighting, or what was the status?
I would say in the air, judging by what obviously has gone down.
Robert was also asked for more information about why he thought that Jasmine was with her sister.
So what makes you believe that she's with her sister?
She told me that she was going to go and spend Easter with them on Tuesday. I was talking about it because I don't have my son, so, you know, it's kind of depressed about that. Drinking a lot over the weekend because I've pretty much been on my own, right?
Okay.
With no evidence to go on, other than that Robert seemed strangely relaxed about the whole scenario, detectives left after a brief search for Jasmine and Aaliyah at the home.
Gather round, friend, and join me by the fire. I have a secret to share. When I was a child, I lived with my grandma. She allowed me to watch Unsolved Mysteries. Fast forward to 2008, my freshman year of college. A series of armed robberies on campus escalated into a serial rapist's reign of terror. That's when I created my first crime podcast. In January 2014, I picked up the podcast again from my college roommate who fell for an underage girl online, to the chilling story of a murdered nun in 1969 Baltimore, and in the Throwaway series, I share my own journey of overcoming homelessness and how that experience led me to unmask a serial killer and identify three of his Jane Doe victims. This is Foul Play Crime Series, where the stories are real and the truth is waiting to be discovered.
Despite the lack of evidence, detectives wanted to speak with Robert further. The following day, they returned to Robert's home and arrested him in connection with Jasmine and Aaliyah's disappearance. He was transported to the police headquarters to be formally interviewed. In the interview, detectives asked Robert for a thorough explanation of when he had last seen Jasmine and Aaliyah. He said that he had gone for a picnic with Jasmine and Aaliyah on the 17th of April at the Bragg Creek area, located around 40 miles away from Cranston. The area where he said they had picnicked was a tiny outback community, nestling in the foothills of the Rocky Mountains. After this, Robert said that they returned home together. He said that the last time he saw them was the following evening. Jasmine and Aaliyah were at home on the sofa while he was getting ready to go on a date with a woman he had recently been seeing. According to Robert, everything seemed fine with Jasmine and Aaliyah as he left the home that evening for his date. He said that when he returned, Jasmine and Aaliyah were gone. However, Jasmine's family hadn't seen or heard from her since the 16th of April, presenting a discrepancy. Furthermore, Jasmine's family had been led to believe that she was in a relationship with Robert. She had never told them that they had broken up, or that they had even had an argument. This was the first that they had ever heard that he was seeing another woman, so they were surprised by Robert's alibi. While the interview was ongoing, detectives obtained a search warrant for his home. What they found inside was peculiar. There were chunks of raw bacon scattered throughout the home, including a piece that was draped across the back of a dining room chair. They found even more raw bacon on top of garbage in a kitchen container, along with the packaging the meat had come from. In the furnace room, detectives pried open the lid on a dry sump and found another piece of bacon. Constable Jim Weeks recollected, "It's raw bacon, and it's bacon that you would not find in strips. It seems relatively fresh. It appears to be recently placed." Detectives also discovered that the front door window had been obscured by cellophane, and the door had been jammed shut by poles used in drywalling. Upstairs at the master bedroom, there was a pin code door lock, which raised further concerns. Since detectives had no evidence to connect Robert to Jasmine and Aaliyah's disappearance, he was released from custody following his interview. However, detectives publicly announced that he was the prime suspect in their disappearance. They also added that they now believe that both Jasmine and Aaliyah were dead. A police source commented, "We did a very exhaustive investigation into the footprints of life, including social media, healthcare, phones, banking information, the fact that our victims were not in contact with her family, which is very inconsistent. After conducting all of those searches, we have not found any footprints of life, and this leads us to believe that there is no evidence to support that our victims are alive." After Robert was released from custody, he was told that he couldn't return home, as detectives and forensic experts needed to examine the home from top to bottom. He went to a local bar, the Berwick Pub, on Cranston Road, South East, where he spoke with local media outside. He was drunk and slurring his words.
How are you feeling throughout all of this?
Traumatized, of course. It's been a very, very stressful experience, of course.
Are you worried about them?
Of course I am, yeah. They should be home. They all, wherever they want to be. But I don't know where that is.
He told the reporters that he had been arrested and questioned by police, but released without charges.
You were kind of the primary suspect in this homicide investigation. You still are.
I believe I'm still a suspect at this time. Of course, I was a suspect when I was in custody. And I guess I'll be a suspect going forward until they figure out that I'm not.
It says the man that they released is still a suspect. So
correct.
Is that your understanding of that too?
From what I understand, yes, correct.
So do the police just have this very, very wrong? What's
yes.
your perspective?
They have it wrong, as far as I'm concerned. Of course they do.
So why do the police think it's you? Why are you the prime suspect? Just because you live there?
Yes. I was the last person to see them. That's why.
The reporter asked Robert a few questions about his relationship with Jasmine.
When did she move in to the house?
October.
In October?
Correct.
And it was her and her daughter that moved in?
Correct.
Was it just the three of you living in the household?
Correct.
And you said that you were... when did you become romantically involved with her?
On and off in that 6 month period, yeah.
So was she living there at the time?
Correct.
Okay, so just so I understand how the situation goes, you own the house.
Correct.
She is a tenant along
right.
with Aaliyah.
With her daughter, yes, correct.
Okay, so that was the extent of your relationship. She rented from you.
Correct.
And you shared the home.
Correct.
Once again, Robert tried to downplay his relationship with Jasmine, referring to her simply as a tenant. The reporter then asked Robert about his arrest.
So how long were you in police custody?
24 hours, I think.
And then they released you and you can't go home, so what have you been doing in the meantime?
Just been here. Literally. They dropped me off here around about midday and just waiting for the forensics to finish at my property and I can go back home.
Were you not sort of perplexed as to where they'd gone or why they were gone for 5 days?
No, because they said that they were going to be having Easter with her sister, so of course nothing alarmed me. Until, of course, I got arrested. So
when you got arrested at that point, did you even know that they were considered missing persons?
No.
Robert was then asked about the kind of people that Jasmine hung around with.
I don't know
who you think they are.
I have no idea.
Did she hang out with questionable people? Was she a good person?
No, she was a good person. Nice person. Yeah, I can't think. There was nothing negative that I would say about her at all. She was a lovely person. I had no issues with her.
See the dad around a lot?
Not at all.
Not at all?
Not at all. The dad is not in the picture.
Never came to the house?
Never met him.
After Robert was released following his arrest, detectives began looking into his comments. They asked that if anybody had seen a Caucasian man in his mid-30s driving a grey, luxurious SUV in the Bragg Creek area between April 16th and April 18th to get in contact. They were referring to Robert and said that he may have been driving with Jasmine and Aaliyah. Meanwhile, more than 50 officers from multiple units, including some on horseback, set their sights on the Bragg Creek area. They asked homeowners in the area to check their properties and reach out to police if they came across anything suspicious. While searching in a remote area of Kananaskis County, they came across a fire pit off a trunk road near the Fortress Junction service station. It appeared to have been burning for some time, but within the ashes, detectives found a toddler's shoe. They continued sifting through the burned debris and found several pages from a child's book and the partial cover of the DVD, The Jungle Book. There were also items that were related to a child's car seat, including a sticker showing the manufacturer Graco. Following the strange discovery, detectives called in a sniffer dog. It detected that accelerant had been used at the fire pit. It was evident that whoever had started the fire was clearly trying to hide something. Following Robert's release from custody, detectives persisted in scrutinizing him as a potential suspect. They enlisted the assistance of crime scene investigators to meticulously search his townhouse for any traces of evidence, shedding light on the fate of Jasmine and Aaliyah. They had already performed a cursory search when Robert was arrested, but they needed to conduct a more thorough one. The unexpected swarm of detectives outside the townhouse perplexed neighbours, who gathered to observe the unfolding activities. Despite the heightened police presence, the residents maintained an air of normalcy. The front yard was adorned with children's toys, such as a soccer ball, toy trucks and a red push buggy, conveying an ordinary scene. Tolga Tuzin, a neighbour residing across the street, remarked on the generally peaceful nature of the neighbourhood. He noted, "In the past couple of days, I've noticed police vehicles coming and going. I wasn't really aware of what was happening until this morning." Detectives impounded Robert's large SUV and obtained a search warrant for his cell phone. They discovered that he had deleted several photographs of Jasmine and Aaliyah on the 23rd of April. Around the same time, he had also deleted two photographs of a silver handgun. It was looking more and more like Robert had killed Jasmine and Aaliyah and then disposed of their bodies and burned the evidence. The search for Jasmine and Aaliyah continued in the Bragg Creek area, but had to be momentarily halted due to poor weather. The area they were searching was close to the foot of the Rockies, and the search was a difficult one, without the added complications from the weather. There was an immediate fear that if Jasmine and Aaliyah had been disposed of in the area, there was a chance that they would never be found. As one source commented, "Everyone's determined to find them, but the conditions are against them, and so is the size of the area. It's like looking for a button in a field." After a couple of days of searching at Robert's home, he was allowed to return. He spoke with the media on his doorstep. His eyes were bloodshot, as he said that he had been drinking for the past 3 days. He commented that he had lost his job, was broke, and had been disowned by his friends. He bluntly added, "No one's knocked on my door. If they were friends, they'd be here." He revealed that he had retained legal representation as a precaution, adding that he was going, as well as could be expected.
Do you love true crime and traveling? Having traveled the world solo the last couple of years and being obsessed with true crime, I found myself researching others who took the same vacations, but never made it home. The Last Trip is a true crime podcast covering missing and murdered people that were living their best lives on vacation. I'm your host, Jamie Beebe, and each week I'll bring you on The Last Trip. taking a deep dive into vacation culture and travel spots, tips on staying alive while traveling, and ultimately recreating someone's last days in paradise. What led to their last trip? And could you be next? Kiara Henry vanished from Maui, Hawaii while traveling solo, and after extensive searches, there are still no leads. Did she meet with the wrong person, fall into the ocean, or simply walk away from her life? Elijah Snow and his wife were celebrating their 10th wedding anniversary in Cancun, Mexico. Elijah was last seen on camera walking up the steps to his hotel room only minutes after his wife got in the elevator to also go to bed. He was found dead the next morning, beaten and stuck in a window at an abandoned neighboring resort. The Mexican authorities said it was an accident. His family said it was murder. Join me, Jamie Beebe, co-host of the popular true crime series Strictly Stalking, as I embark on a brand new adventure combining true crime and travel. Listen to The Last Trip wherever you get your podcasts and follow The Last Trip on Instagram at The Last Trip Crime Pod.
Amidst Robert's persistent claims of innocence, an unnamed acquaintance stepped forward to share some insights with the media. This individual portrayed Robert as a loose cannon and consistently noted an unsettling demeanor, a sentiment that resonated with the detectives handling the case. Throughout media interviews and interactions with detectives, Robert displayed an unusually cavalier attitude towards the grave situation. While detectives strongly suspected Robert's involvement in the deaths of Jasmine and Leah, they faced the challenge of securing sufficient evidence to justify an arrest. In Canada, detectives have the legal authority to employ sting operations, a strategy involving undercover detectives assuming roles within the criminal underworld to gather additional evidence. Recognizing the need for more conclusive proof, detectives initiated a sting operation on the 5th of May. Two undercover officers approached Robert on a street near his home and engaged in conversation. Posing as members of a criminal element, they conveyed an intent to help Robert in evading the attention of detectives pursuing him. This method aimed to elicit potentially incriminating information from Robert that could strengthen the case against him within the boundaries of Canadian law. They then drove Robert to a secretive location, which was their alleged hub for illicit activities. Over the next 2 hours, the undercover officers endeavoured to cultivate Robert's trust, but his demeanour remained guarded. Suspicions lingered, prompting Robert to address the detectives. "I don't know how it works here in this country. If I ask if you're cops, you have to tell me, right?" An undercover officer affirmed, stating yes, but cautioned Robert that he could only pose such a question once. Sternly, he then added, "You ever ask me again after this, then I'm not going to be happy about it." Robert then asked about entrapment, to which the undercover officers reassured him that their intentions were genuine. They simply wanted to help him. The conversation shifted to the investigation, with Robert explaining his unconventional tactic of scattering bacon throughout his home. According to him, pork closely resembled human scent, attracting sniffer dogs. Despite Robert's initial reservations, after about 3 hours of conversation, Robert told them that he would take them out to a remote area in Kananaskis County to clean up some incriminating evidence. When asked about the nature of the evidence, one of the undercover officers queried, "What are we searching for? Them?" Robert locked eyes with him and nodded yes. The two undercover officers and Robert climbed into his vehicle and set off towards Kananaskis County, a wilderness area on the eastern ridge of the Rocky Mountains. They pulled up on a dirt road just west of Highway 40, and Robert asked them to follow him down the hill. Darkness had completely engulfed the rural area, The only light was from the flashlight of one of the undercover officer's cell phones. They walked into the trees with Robert guiding them, before he suddenly stopped. One of the undercover officers asked Robert which way they had to go. Robert turned around to him and said, "You're looking at it." He then pointed out an area of branches that were next to his left foot. There just appeared to be a pile of branches and leaves, and the undercover officers were perplexed. Picking up on their confusion, Robert grabbed a branch and lifted it up. Underneath, the two undercover officers observed a blue blanket. It contained the lifeless bodies of Jasmine and Aaliyah. The two undercover officers continued talking with Robert and asked what exactly had happened. He said that Jasmine wanted too much out of their relationship, adding, "She wanted to get fucking married." Robert was immediately arrested, as the two bodies were transported to the medical examiner's office for an identification to be made and for a cause of death to be determined. Detectives then held a press conference to inform the public of the grim update.
At approximately 4 a.m. this morning, members of the CPS located the bodies of a woman and child in Kananaskis. Although formal identification must be made by the Office of the Chief Medical Examiner, we believe we have located the remains of 25-year-old Jasmine Lovett and 22-month-old Aaliyah Sanderson. On behalf of the entire police service, we'd like to extend our heartfelt condolences to the Lovett and Sanderson families. Jasmine would have celebrated her 26th birthday last week, and this is truly a tragic loss.
Over at the medical examiner's office, the bodies were positively identified as Jasmine and Aaliyah via DNA. The pathologist found that Jasmine had died as the result of multiple injuries. She had sustained blunt force injuries to her head, before she was shot once to the left side of her head behind the ear. The blunt force injuries that Jasmine had suffered had caused bleeding on the brain, which would have quickly caused her death without medical intervention. Aaliyah had died from blunt force traumatic injuries, including scalp hematoma and subdural hemorrhage to the brain surface and spinal cord. Jasmine and Aaliyah's family subsequently released a heartfelt statement in the wake of the autopsies, which read, "We would like to thank the public for their continued support, which has meant a great deal to us. Our lives have been devastated, and our hearts are heavy. We're trying to understand how this tragedy could have happened to our loved ones." A friend of the family then started a GoFundMe to raise money to cover the funeral expenses. Donna Burrow said of Jasmine's mother, "The biggest thing for her was that they were lying in the dirt somewhere. And now that they've got them, they've found them, that's just brought her an amazing amount of peace." Dana also said that any additional money raised would go to a domestic violence shelter and could also be used to start something in Jasmine and Aaliyah's honour. She commented, "It's too late for Jasmine and Aaliyah now, but hopefully their names will make a difference somewhere." The GoFundMe well exceeded the funeral costs, and Jasmine's mother Kim and her sister Genevieve presented a $25,000 check to Calgary Women's Emergency Shelter. The shelter provides a variety of safety, counselling and prevention programs, and includes a 24-hour family violence helpline. Kim shared her plans to keep her daughter and granddaughter's memory alive by starting a foundation in their names and working with community organizations. Kim took a minute to thank everybody for their outpouring of support and their donations, which had reached almost $60,000. The community of Cranston had raised thousands through various fundraisers at the local bar and grocery store. Kim commented, "Seeing how many lives Jasmine and Aaliyah affected, seeing how the city came together, every donation, big or small, it was just incredible." On the 7th of May, Robert Leeming was charged with two counts of second-degree murder. He was sent to the Calgary Remand Centre, where his defence attorney, Balfour Dare, commented, I can't speak to whether there are safety concerns. It is something that's always on your mind for people charged with these types of offences. And we just hope that the guards at the remand centre will do their bit. The man is innocent until proven guilty, and he should be treated the same as anybody else who's in there. And that means he should get protection as anybody else should get. The preliminary hearing against Robert was scheduled for February of 2020 to determine whether there was enough evidence against him for the case to proceed to trial. Before then, prosecutor Doug Taylor told the judge that he wanted Robert's second-degree murder charges to be upgraded to first-degree murder. A charge of first-degree murder in the case would have to involve a planned and deliberate intentional killing, or one committed in the course of a list of other offences, including unlawful confinement or criminal harassment. The preliminary hearing was closed, but in August it was announced that there was enough evidence against Robert to stand trial, but only on second-degree murder charges. It was also decided that Robert would be facing a bench trial, meaning that a jury wouldn't be present. Instead, the judge would serve as the jury, ultimately deciding on whether or not Robert was guilty. The trial was scheduled for fall of 2021, and on the 13th of October that year, Robert arrived in court. Before opening statements began, he admitted to being half guilty. He pleaded guilty to the murder of Jasmine, but denied responsibility for the murder of Aaliyah. During opening statements, prosecutor Doug Taylor detailed how Jasmine and Aaliyah had been found in shallow graves after Robert had led undercover officers to the spot. He said that the prosecution's case would be focusing on the murder of Aaliyah, since Robert had already admitted to killing Jasmine. He stated, "As we heard moments ago, the accused admits that he murdered Jasmine Lovett, yet he maintains that he did not murder 22-month-old Aaliyah Sanderson." The prosecution respectfully suggests that once all of the evidence is heard in this case, there can be no doubt whatsoever that the accused murdered Aaliyah too. The first witness called for the prosecution was Jasmine's sister Genevieve, who testified about the dinner they had with Robert and Jasmine on the 14th of April. She testified, "It was very strange. It seemed like emotionally it wasn't quite on the level you would think a relationship would be." However, when cross-examined by defense attorney Balfour Dare, she said that Robert seemed enamored with Aaliyah. He asked her, "It seemed to you he was quite in love with Aaliyah?" Genevieve responded, "Yeah." The next witness the prosecution called was Constable Jim Weeks. He had examined the fire pit that was discovered before the bodies of Jasmine and Aaliyah were found. It was located not too far away from their shallow graves. A photograph of the toddler's burned shoe was then presented to the courtroom as Constable Weeks testified, "This, in my opinion, is the outsole. What really stands out is the number 7 manufacturer stamp. The number 7 is of relevance to me." He said that he did some research on the age of a child who would wear such a size, telling the judge, "There are toddlers size 7, age group being 2 years of age." The constable also detailed the strange discovery of bacon in Robert's home and the pin code lock on the bedroom, testifying that it was unlike anything he had ever seen in his career before. Following his testimony, the prosecution called Dr. Amal Kotsi Khan, the pathologist. He said that Robert had beat Jasmine to near death before finishing her off with a bullet to the head. He stated, "There's quite significant damage that has occurred. That's from the projectile. It's completely damaged what we would call the brain stem. If this part of the brain is not connected to the spinal cord, you cannot sustain life." However, he wasn't as certain about the manner in which Aaliyah had died. He said that she had suffered blunt force trauma to the left, right, and back side of her head. She also had an injury to her lumbar spine. He said that it could have been from the result of a homicide, but could have also been from an accidental fall, telling the judge, "I don't think it's impossible to occur from a fall." Despite this, he categorized both deaths as homicides. He said that a fall would result in injuries on the victim's arms and legs. Yet these were absent in Aaliyah. The testimony then shifted to the undercover operation, which ultimately ensnared Robert. Afterwards, the defense called their first and only witness, Robert Leeming. He claimed that on the 16th of April 2019, Aaliyah had fallen down the stairs, causing the fatal head injuries. He said that he found her unresponsive in her crib, and immediately called Jasmine, who was upstairs. According to Robert, he couldn't find his cell phone to call 911 when he discovered Aaliyah unresponsive. He said that Jasmine came downstairs and blamed him for what had happened to Aaliyah, and accused him of hurting her. He testified, "She confronted me, pointed her finger at me, and said, 'You've done something,' at which point I stood up and I hit her." He said that he reached for a hammer that he had left on a nearby breakfast table after hanging pictures up earlier. He stated, "I freaked out. I snapped and I hit her with a hammer on the head. I remember hitting her twice." According to Robert, Jasmine was unconscious on the floor, but he couldn't bring himself to hit her again. Instead, he said he went into the garage and grabbed a .22 caliber firearm and shot her once in the head. Robert said that afterwards, he wrapped both Jasmine and Aaliyah in moving blankets and then put them in the trunk of his SUV. It was the prosecution's theory that Jasmine had walked in on Robert sexually abusing Aaliyah, which was the real motivation behind her murder. During Aaliyah's autopsy, the pathologist had found evidence of potential sexual abuse. Under cross-examination by the prosecution, it was presented to Robert that he had been texting a woman that he had been dating around the same time as the murders. This contradicted his claim that he couldn't find his cell phone to call for help. Robert's exchanges with Kathleen Jukes started shortly before 5 p.m. on April 16th, around the same time that he had picked Aaliyah up from daycare. They didn't end until around 9 p.m, when Robert said he discovered Aaliyah unresponsive in her crib, following a fall down the stairs around 2 hours earlier. Prosecutor Taylor said to Robert, "You didn't kill Jasmine because she was accusing you of doing something to Aaliyah, like a fall or something. She was accusing you of something even worse, right?" Robert denied that this was the case. After Robert stepped down from the witness stand, the defense rested their case. During closing arguments, Prosecutor Taylor said that Robert had killed Aaliyah to cover up the murder of Jasmine. He pointed out that when Robert admitted to killing Jasmine to the undercover officers, he never once mentioned Aaliyah, even to say that she had died accidentally. The prosecutor stared at the judge as he said, "There are no points in bad guy land for killing kids." Defense attorney Balfour Dare said that the theory failed because the fatal injuries to Aaliyah were not caused in the same manner her mother was killed. He noted that her injuries would not have been consistent with her being attacked with a hammer, and said that if Robert had resorted to killing Aaliyah to cover up Jasmine's murder, then he would have used the same methods. The defense attorney stated, "The verdict should be not guilty, but I say, as an alternative, there may be a finding of manslaughter." After the closing arguments, Judge Keith Yamuchi needed time to deliberate. He called everybody back to court on the 24th of January to deliver his verdict. He found Robert Leeming guilty of the murder of Aaliyah Sanderson. He said that Robert wasn't a believable witness, stating, "This court does not believe his explanation of how Aaliyah died. It does not believe his evidence." The judge said that the reason for Robert's murderous rampage on Jasmine defied logic, and said that there was no doubt Robert had caused the injuries to Aaliyah, stating, "Her injuries were not accidental. He meant to cause Aaliyah's death, or meant to cause bodily harm to Aaliyah that was likely to cause her death. Why would he not use his best efforts to find Aaliyah help? Instead, he went downstairs for a cigarette." Robert Leeming returned to court again in November to be sentenced. The prosecution said that he should be incarcerated for a minimum term of 25 years, while the defense wanted him to be eligible for parole after serving 20 years. Prosecutor Taylor said to the judge, Aaliyah was killed as a form of cleanup of her mother's murder. Before the sentence was imposed, Jasmine and Aaliyah's loved ones were allowed to provide victim impact statements. Aaliyah's grandmother, Jodie, described the pain Robert had caused as torture, telling the judge, Torture is the only word I can think of to describe how it feels to lose a loved one, because they were a victim of neglect or homicide. The pain is overwhelming, sometimes making it difficult to concentrate. Memories that once made you happy can cause waves of grief, because they remind you that you will never make memories with them again. The judge then handed Robert Leeming an automatic life sentence with a minimum sentence of 22 years. In handing down the sentence, Judge Amuchi said to Robert, You murdered Jasmine Lovett, a woman who loved you. You breached her trust and committed the worst type of domestic violence imaginable. You killed her, and you admitted to it. He then spoke about Aaliyah, telling Robert, She trusted you and felt safe in your arms. There was some forethought in your killing of this little girl, as you killed her after you killed her mother. You breached her trust. Outside of court, Jasmine's mother and grandmother spoke with City News.
I think about them every day, every hour.
That does give me a lot of relief to know they are in a better place. Very relieved.
Very relieved. I think I held my breath the whole time.
Yeah.
I actually wanted to get up and hug the judge, but I know that would have looked super weird. Obviously, happy is not the best word, right? But pleased that we got justice and relieved that it's over.
Jasmine Lovett poured every ounce of her existence into her daughter, Aaliyah Sanderson. Emerging from a tumultuous relationship and a horrible breakup with Aaliyah's father, she yearned for a new beginning. With hope flickering, she believed that Robert Leeming held the promise of a fresh start. Yet the sparks of their connection quickly dimmed, spiraling into a destructive descent that culminated in the murders of Jasmine and Aaliyah. Well, besties, that is it for this episode of Morbidology. As always, thank you so much for listening, and I'd like to say a massive thank you to my newest supporter up on Patreon, Paula. For this year, I'm planning on doing a lot more bonus episodes up on Patreon, which are available on the $5 tier and above. The past couple of months have been really hard on me, so I've fallen a bit behind on all of my work. I also upload ad-free and early release episodes behind the scenes, and I also send out a handwritten thank you note along with some Patreon exclusive merch. If you'd like to join us up on Patreon, the link is in the show notes. If you're up on Facebook, I'd also love for you to join my private Facebook group for the podcast. Just search for Morbidology and it'll show up. I'm trying to get it more active so that I can chat with you and hear some of your thoughts on the episodes. Remember to check us out at morbidology.com for more information about this episode and to read our true crime articles. Until next time, take care of yourselves, stay safe, and have an amazing week.